Okay. Good evening. And welcome to everyone who's joining us on the internet. I suppose you could say that everything we're talking about could be reduced to this statement: you all need to begin to be willing to treat each other as well as you would your dog. If your dog becomes ill, or your cat, you know, it doesn't matter how exasperating they've been when they were feeling well. It doesn't matter what has happened. One thing becomes paramount in your mind, and that is that you love them, and that you don't want them to suffer. And so you shift gears. And I'm not picking on you. You shift gears. And instead of finding value in the righteous indignation that you generally are willing to express relative to this pet's behavior, it becomes far more important to you to have your mind occupied with what? Anything that will contribute to their getting better. You will devote your mind to knowing what will help, to finding out what will help. And the simple fact is that love, the love that you feel when you devote yourself to it, does and will heal. Now, let's say that a stray dog or a stray cat comes to your porch, neglected, hungry, obviously not having had a good meal in many, many days, and you offer them food and warmth and clean them up. But in the process, you find that this animal is very frightened, is afraid of you, is afraid as a result of your movements, and it becomes obvious that this animal has been mistreated. Do you reject this animal? Well, if you're an animal lover, you don't. And what do you do? Or what don't you do? What do you not do? What you don't do is judge them or arrive at your behavior based upon their fear of you and, let us say, any aggressiveness that they express toward you because of their fear. Again, instead of basing your behavior on their behavior, you base your behavior on the love that you feel and the fact that you know that whatever mistreatment they received was not deserved, that they are deserving of love, and that they will respond to love. And so you take on the task of being the persistent presence of love, the persistent presence of reassurance, the persistent invitation to them to be willing to receive your benign and loving attention. And you know that if you will persist long enough, you will win them over, as it said. Now, what I've described fulfills the direction that I've given, that you all need to find an object of your affection and extend it and break your isolation. Now, if you work with this animal persistently and lovingly, and its behavior changes, and it becomes more docile, and it becomes more relaxed, and even becomes affectionate, you think you did this for this cat or this dog. You give yourself credit for having contributed to its healing. But there's something more important. And the something more important is how you were being you. You saw the animal worthy of attention, that its behavior indicated it probably wasn't worthy of. And you persisted to stay in alignment with your love and your confidence that your expression of love would have a beneficial effect. And so you, relative to this animal, moved into a mode of behavior. And this mode of behavior is the one that all of you should be insisting upon operating from all day long with all of your brothers and sisters, with each other. The more important thing than what you might have done for the animal is what you did for yourself. Because relative to this animal, you broke your habit of governing your actions based upon the actions of something outside yourself. You moved into a way of being that was true. A way of being that was truly in harmony with your nature and your function and your reason for being. Not your reason, but the reason for being placed in you by that which caused you to be and causes you to be. You look at the frightened animal. You look at this mistreated animal. And you don't say, oh, he's been damaged. The damage is permanent. I have determined that this is a damaged animal, and I will treat him according to my assessment. And so I will carefully get it into a cage and take it to the pound where it can be put to sleep and not be a distress to anyone. but you do this every day with each other. You determine what your sister or brother is, as we talked about last week. By ignoring the totality of that brother or sister, and instead of that, breaking up everything there is about that brother and sister into small parts, and then choosing this part and that part and another part, and bringing them together into a caricature of them. And then you behave toward them on the basis of these disparate parts that you have brought together that do not reflect them truly. And you discount them. And it's this habit that has to be broken. It's the breaking of this habit that constitutes, for lack of better words, the, quote, process, unquote, of awakening. You can no longer afford to operate on the basis of your best ego perceptions and expect to see healing or emancipation for your brother or for yourself. Emancipation from a bondage that is illegitimately governing you. Let's go into the book. And I'm going to repeat the last paragraph from last week. The ego looks straight at the Father and does not see him, for it has denied his Son. In other words, you, from your independent vantage point, your imagined state of autonomy, look at your brother or look at your world, and you don't see God there. You see what you have determined it to be. And the reason you don't see the Father in everything that is in your experience is because you have disowned him. You have denied him and lost the conscious awareness of your being his son, his offspring, the direct expression of God, always now. You deny your sonship. The ego has denied, capital H, his, God's, Son. And so it looks straight at the Father. You look straight at reality, and you do not see reality. You see it because there's nothing else to see, but you are calling it something else. And you are confining yourself to the definition you have applied to it. Now you have to shift gears. And you have to treat the plant or the lamp or the bird or your brother or sister like a mistreated dog or cat. Because a mistreated dog or cat is something that will cause you to shift gears and behave on the basis of the love that is in you, rather than on the basis of the imaginative descriptions of everything that you have made up and applied to everything. Continuing, would you remember the Father? That's the big question. Because the answer to that question is your salvation. If you will remember the Father, you will remember who you are. Because the Father isn't just the Father. The Father is your Father. The Father is the source, and for lack of better words, the generator of your being at this moment. It is the energy of the Father. It is the omnipotence of the Father in movement that looks like you right where you are. The Father being the Father right where you are is what you are. And so when you remember the Father, you must unavoidably have the experience of remembering yourself. Another important statement. Accept his Son, and you will remember him. Well, who is this Son to be accepted as his Son? It's you. Because I promise you, you won't ever really accept anybody else as his Son. Because you don't want to have to experience the inadequacy of not being his Son like this other one is his Son. And you also don't want to experience the jealousy that you couldn't help but feel if you really believed that someone else in this room or in your life was his Son and you weren't. The only Son that you will benefit from remembering is the Son of God, is yourself. And that's what all of this is about. That's all that awakening is about. And that's all that's relevant at any moment during your day. Because if you will dare to be willing to remember that you are his Son, his offspring, his manifestation, there will be no experience of inadequacy, and there will be nothing to be jealous of, and there will be a spontaneous recognition that everyone else is also. And you will spontaneously be able to extend the recognition of God to everyone and everything, regardless of their behavior. Just like the frightened and inappropriate behavior of a mistreated dog or cat. Continuing, nothing can demonstrate that his Son is unworthy, for nothing can prove that a lie is true. You see, the ego is incapable of telling the truth. The ego is a liar and the father of the lie. And it's sneaky. It says, you know what? You may be the son of God. You may be the daughter of God. But, as we discussed last week, it says, God made you to be on your own and gave you all the tools you need to practice being like Him, so that you in your own right can become as God and co-create shoulder to shoulder with God. You see, that's a sneaky lie. It sounds good, and it seems to say, yes, you are the Son of God, but you're not here to be His puppet. You're not here to be His clone. You're here to be something in your own right. And that's what God has placed in you, the right to be yourself. Different from everyone else. But, again, nothing can demonstrate that His Son is unworthy, for nothing can prove that a lie is true. What you see of His Son through the eyes of the ego is a demonstration that His Son does not exist. Yet, where the Son is, the Father must be. If any one of you exists, it must be because the Father is being the Father right there where you are, and right where you are, the Father is called John or Joe or Mary or Henrietta. Where the Son is, the Father must be. Accept what God does not deny, and He will demonstrate its truth. Interesting. Accept what God does not deny. God does not deny that you are His expression. God does not deny your sonship. God does not deny you. Accept yourself as the presence of God, being all there is of you. And God will demonstrate its truth. God will demonstrate the truth of the fact that He is all there is of you. Why? Not because you asked pretty, not because you measured up, but because you stopped introducing a disagreement with the truth about you. You became, I'm going to say, you became passive. You became a non-assertive presence from your own right to be yourself. And in the absence of the assertion of an independent, autonomous will, the truth about you, that has always been the truth about you, sits unobstructed. And you see it, and you feel it, and you experience it. And you could say, well, God has revealed Himself to me in me. But at the bottom line, your being is and always has been God revealing Himself to you as you. The difference is you're not arguing with it anymore. You're not arguing it by asserting this right to act independent of the Father on the basis of your own concoctions, your own mental imaginativeness. The witnesses for God stand in His light. The witnesses for God instead of the witnesses for what you have imagined everything is. The witnesses for God stand in His light. Which simply means you're not creating any shadows by your self-will, independent self-will. And so the witnesses for God stand in His light and behold what He created. And I'm adding, instead of what you made up. Their silence, meaning the silence of the witnesses for God, their silence is the sign that they have beheld God's Son. And in the presence of Christ, they need demonstrate nothing, for Christ speaks to them of Himself and of His Father. They, the witnesses for God, are silent because Christ speaks to them, and it is His words that they speak. This means that the ego sense of yourself, which in the past you have taken pride in being able to express and assert, it is silent because what comes out of your mouth when you are witnessing for God is the Holy Spirit speaking, that which is nothing more than your right mind. And so you could say the words of Christ are the words that you speak. Let's read this again. The witnesses for God, meaning you, when you've shifted gears and are not attempting to assert your self-righteous will, and you have decided to stand in perfect alignment with the love that is in you, the witnesses for God stand in His light and behold what He created. And that's why healing occurs. Their silence, the witnesses for God, is the sign that they have beheld God's Son. And in the presence of Christ, they need demonstrate nothing. For Christ speaks to them of Himself and of His Father. You see, the ego's always demonstrating something. It's always asserting itself to accomplish something. And what it's accomplishing is the securing of its safety so that its actual non-existence will never be discovered. And the illusion of its existence will continue. They, the witnesses for God, are silent because Christ speaks to them, and it is His words that they speak. Every brother you meet becomes a witness for Christ. Every mistreated, starving animal that comes to your porch can become a witness for what it truly is and what its source is. Or for the ego. Depending on what you perceive in him. if you are going to believe what the animal is presenting to you, instead of believing what you know from the love that is in you, you will hold yourself apart. You will hold it apart from you. And one way or another, you will dismiss it from it, from your experience, and you will have missed God. And you will have missed the experience of your sonship. You will have missed your opportunity to be what you are and fulfill your function. Now, this can get tricky here. Everyone convinces you of what you want to perceive, and of the reality of the kingdom you have chosen for your vigilance. You want to know something? The most loving person, the most principled person, the kindest person in the world, let's say me, for example, can be misperceived by any of you if you want to misperceive me. And you can also misperceive the Christ who presents himself to you as a mistreated ego, who is defensive and self-protective, and aggressive and threatening. You can misperceive them as what they're presenting, and miss the opportunity to see them for what they truly are, miss the opportunity to shift gears from your tendency to engage in self-righteous reaction, and instead hold to the fact that they can't possibly be what they are currently perceiving themselves to be, and that love is the answer to their misperception. Everyone convinces you, whether they're good or bad, whether they're nice or not, everyone convinces you of what you want to perceive, and of the reality of the kingdom you have chosen for your vigilance. A nice person, a loving person comes along, and you're an ego in a self-protective mode, and you look at this nice, thoughtful, kind, non-defended person, and you say, "Oh boy, we got a sucker here. Here's someone I can take advantage of. Here's someone I can use, and they won't say no because they're so kind." And so they convince you of the reality of the kingdom you have chosen for your vigilance. You see? Everything you perceive is a witness to what? The thought system you want to be true. And all I'm ever doing is encouraging you to want something else to be true than what you have been wanting to be true. Every brother has the power to release you if you will to be free. Every mistreated animal that comes to your door has the power to release you from your tendency in your normal everyday life to behave on the basis of behavior you're presented with. And provide you with the opportunity to shift gears and behave on the basis of the love that is in you, which it is your function and your birthright and your fulfillment to embody. So every brother, whether pleasant or unpleasant, has this power to release you, because no matter what their presentation is, it gives you the opportunity to choose to be in alignment with your real nature, provides you with the opportunity to see God there, which causes you to remember that you are the Son of God, and that therefore the brother is the Son of God, setting you on the track of singularity, which itself is the absence of fragmentation, the absence of friction, the absence of conflict. And in the purity of the singularity, the light of love has the opportunity to illuminate God to you and to them. You cannot accept false witness of Him unless you have evoked false witness against Him. Oh, here comes another sucker. You've evoked false witness against this loving person. You see? If, on the other hand, separate and apart from your evoking false witness against Him, if He speaks not of Christ to you, you spoke not of Christ to Him. You hear but your own voice, and if Christ speaks through you, you will hear Him. Now, a frightened animal does not speak by his behavior the truth about himself, and your brother can speak not of the Christ to you, but you do not have to hear that which is not of the Christ from him as though it's true. You can hear his distress call just like you would the stray dog, and you will not believe that it's an unalterable fact. And because you see the Christ there, in spite of that one's lack of being able to see the Christ in himself, you will have the capacity to love with endurance. Providing the environment of safety in which fear can vanish. The next section is entitled Experience and Perception. It is impossible not to believe what you see, but it is equally impossible to see what you do not believe. perceptions are built up on the basis of experience, and experience leads to beliefs. It is not until beliefs are fixed that perceptions stabilize. In effect, then, what you believe, you do see. Whether it's true or not, what you believe, you do see. And your belief, therefore, becomes the structure through which you experience life. It becomes your prison. It becomes that which binds you, because you will see only what you believe. Now, mind you, you see only what you believe because you have chosen to see only what you believe. You have chosen what you believe. Waking up is a movement out of belief. In effect, then, I'm repeating, what you believe, you do see. That is what I meant when I said, "Blessed are ye who have not seen and still believe." For those who believe in the resurrection will see it. Oh, I know. You're nothing but a hunk of matter, born of woman. Full of trouble for a few days, and you die. That's what you believe. Tain't so. But you believe it. Tain't so. And so, trumpets blaring, you don't have to believe it. You can abandon the belief and inquire beyond it. Those who believe in the resurrection will see it. Well, the only resurrection worth a hill of beans today is yours. And those who believe in it, you who believe in it, will see it. The resurrection is the complete triumph of Christ over the ego, not by attack, but by transcendence. How do you nurture a frightened and abused animal into affectionate behavior and trust? By transcending the presenting picture that it gives to you. Right there where it appears that there is a damaged animal. When you transcend that presentation by not honoring it, by not believing it, you leave the door of your love wide open so that it can be extended to that which is there in that animal that is capable of being unafraid, because it no longer believes that it must be afraid. You don't bully the animal into fearlessness. You don't twist its tail or its ears to get it to sit down and realize that it doesn't have to be afraid. You see, you don't transform it. You don't transform its fear by attacking the stupidity of its fearfulness when it's not called for. Complete triumph is accomplished not by attack, not by aggressive willfulness exerted over and asserted upon that animal. No. But by transcendence. For Christ does rise above the ego and all its works and ascends to the Father and His kingdom. You stick with the animal because you know there's a capacity to experience and feel love that it has been frightened out of allowing itself to feel. Your mind ascends to the truth about that animal and behaves on the basis of that truth. Would you join in the resurrection or the crucifixion? Now, I'm going to say this. Those are really the only two choices you have, and you practice one or the other of them all day long. Does that make you terrible? Does that render you punishable? Does that make you guilty? No, it just means that your choices have effects that are either fulfilling or not. And when they're not fulfilling, they're no fun. And if you don't like having no fun, then you need to make a different choice. Would you join in the resurrection or the crucifixion? Would you condemn your brothers or free them? I know. You'll condemn them a little while so they will know what it feels like. And then you'll free them. But you want a little justice, please. But you see, as I said earlier, the most important part of what happens when you treat a mistreated dog well, with love, is that not only does it bless the dog because you cared about the dog, it brought you into perfect alignment with your function, your purpose, and therefore your sanity. So, would you condemn your brothers or free them? It means, would you do what is in utter harmony with your being that causes you to wake up to the truth of you? Or would you do that which confuses you, causes a loss of memory of the truth about you and puts you in a place of constant suffering and strife. You make the choice between the two all day long. There aren't any other choices. Would you transcend your prison and ascend to the Father? Well, not until Job suffers a little bit more, because it's just too satisfying to see him get his comeuppance. Hold on, God, I'll be there in a minute. Which means, hold on, me. I'm choosing to suffer and be ignorant of my birthright a little longer. Continuing, for these questions are all the same and are answered together. There has been much confusion about what perception means, because the same word is used both for awareness and for interpretation of awareness. I perceive that fellow over there. I experience the presence of that fellow over there. And I perceive a really nice guy. Or I perceive somebody who doesn't take very good care of himself. See? The latter are interpretations. The latter are assessments. And they're different from being aware that something is occurring there as a specific experience available to all of you to experience. Yet, you cannot be aware without interpretation. And what you perceive is your interpretation. This course is perfectly clear. I know you all laugh. This course is perfectly clear. You do not see it clearly because you are interpreting against it and therefore do not believe it. And if belief determines perception, you do not perceive what it means and therefore do not accept it. Now, let's change the words. Your brother or sister is perfectly clear. You do not see them clearly because you are interpreting against them and therefore do not believe them, the clarity, the clear movement of being that they are. And if belief determines perception, you do not perceive what they mean and therefore do not accept them, the Christ that they are. The ego perceives only. The Holy Spirit knows. The Holy Spirit is nothing more than your right mind. Your right mind knows. Why? Because it doesn't lean into the presentation the world makes to you. It doesn't lean into the presentation your brothers and sisters extend to you. It doesn't lean into the definitions given to the universe or to the objects in your daily life. It leans into God. To learn of God what the meaning is of each and everything. It bypasses perception altogether. It does not engage perception in any way. It transcends perception by not engaging it in any way. And that's why I so often say, ask of the Holy Spirit, what does this mean? What does that mean? Sit and be present with things, with an innocent mind, a mind innocent of past perceptions, a mind innocent of the intent to see what you've always seen before, and a desire to have that thing convey to you, by virtue of your willingness to be intimate with it, what it really is, what its capital M meaning is, what God is being right there, right now, and the why of God's being it that way. The fullness of the glory of God right there. And I'll tell you something. The fullness of the glory of God, those words, is not what is being right there. So don't look at the rose and say, oh, I've had this wonderful realization. It's the fullness of the glory of God. No, it's not the fullness of the glory of God. Those are just the best words that one can come up with for an experience, an intimate experience of undiluted meaning. Undiluted divine meaning that not only defines itself, but defines you divinely, as well as the Father, and as well as everything else, so that all of it is drawn together into a unity, a singularity, without any of it losing its distinctness. Yet, continuing, different experiences lead to different beliefs. Well, they only lead to different beliefs if you are in the ego mode, the defensive mode, where you are analyzing everything so that you can come to conclusions which will become your beliefs. Beliefs which will absolutely govern what you see. Different experiences lead to different beliefs, and experience teaches. I am leading you. Every Sunday night. And every time you listen to me, in the privacy of your own mind, on any given day of the week, I am leading you to a new kind of experience, which you will become less and less willing to deny. I'm leading you to an experience that isn't being colored by your predisposition to see things according to your already existing beliefs. I am leading you to an experience that comes of unguarded, unpremeditated conscious awareness. Learning of Christ is easy. For to perceive with him involves no strain at all. Now each of you has a guide, and that guide is awake. That guide is therefore the Christ. And you also each have the Holy Spirit, which, although at the moment it seems to be something different from you that you can lean into, it is at the bottom line nothing more than your right mind. Learning of Christ is easy, for to perceive with him involves no strain at all. What's work is when you're trying to figure it out all by yourself, ignoring the obvious, and coming up with some fanciful imagination that somehow has a ring of solidarity to it and substance to it that others might believe when you present the idea to them, so that they will join with you and help substantiate what from the beginning was nothing more than perception, not knowing. His perceptions, the Christ, the Holy Spirit, which is the Christ that you are your natural awareness. And it is only distortions which you introduce that tire you. Well, you say, it's much more difficult to love the unlovable. How on earth can I love that bastard and not be exhausted at the end of the day from the trouble? Well, you're right. How can you love your flawed perception and not be exhausted? Abandon your perceptions in favor of being present with that about which you have made an assessment, without making the assessment, and being present with them innocently. That is your natural awareness, and it will not tire you to engage in it. Let the Christ in you interpret for you, and do not try to limit what you see by narrow little beliefs which are unworthy of God's Son, meaning which are unworthy of you and which are unworthy of the one you are having perceptions about. For until Christ comes into his own, the Son of God will see himself as fatherless. Again, said differently, for until the Holy Spirit comes into his own, you, the Son of God, will see yourself as fatherless. So you see, we've used a lot of words, but at the bottom line, it boils down to the fact that you need to be willing to treat each other as well as you're willing to treat a dog. And you know what? what none of you believe? None of you believes that such a simple thing can be the turning point in your awakening. None of you believes that such a simple thing will undo all illusion. But it will. As you go into this week, as you go through this week, I encourage you to watch to see what it is you're wanting to see. And then be careful that you do not try to hold your brother in bondage to what you choose to see about him, what you choose to perceive about him, what you choose to believe about him, because what you believe, you will see, whether there's any justification for it or not. And when everyone is going through their day, seeing their perception of each other, rather than what's really there, everyone's behavior will, in one way or another, be obtuse. It will not be appropriate to the reality that is going on, and the response you will get will be, in one form or another, objection. Because none of you likes to be seen for what you're not. And so the very context in which you all generally relate to each other is the exact thing that creates and maintains and reinforces conflict. This week, try introducing something new. Is that an admonishment? Or a simple invitation? Well, I'll put it this way. For those to whom a simple invitation works, it's a simple invitation. To those to whom a simple invitation doesn't work, it is an admonishment. It is a firm, demand to engage in something you're not inclined to engage in, because what you're being invited to engage in is the one thing that can change everything. And I love you all enough. I love you all enough to be very, very straight with you. Because I love you. And because I want for you more than you're letting yourself have. I look forward to being with you next week.